good for smart people for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. I'm Nico. I'm your host, talking movies, television, music, and so much more in a way that smart people can enjoy them. Yeah, that's right. It's culture. 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 I'm like a vulture. Here on culture, not agriculture or horticulture. Yeah, it's culture. I'll give you ulcers like Whitey Bulger. Here on culture. It's culture. I'm sorry. So sorry. So very, very sorry. Hey, guys, how are you? Welcome to Cultured. I don't know if you got the name by now. Did it sink in? I wonder if there's anybody in their cars like, what's this show called again? They definitely have that sort of voice. Perhaps they wear a top hat. Did the young fella ever say the name of this program? Yeah, old geezer, it's called Cultured. I apologize for the little limerick there. I'm a little loosey-goosey. I don't have a lot to say today. I have some topics written down, and we'll get to them, but it's kind of a laid-back edition of this podcast. It's been a tough week here on Too Many Thoughts Media. I shouldn't say tough. It's been a great week. It's a good kind of tough. The type that strengthens your character. You know, it's like that movie Holes, where they dug a bunch of holes in order to become reformed young men. That's what this week was in terms of podcasting. Some awesome stuff on the website. If you are not aware, head on over to TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media. See all of the content we're posting, multiple episodes a day there on the website. Too much for you to handle. It'll take care of your commute to and from work. We'll get you through your workout. Perhaps we'll sing you a lullaby and rock you to sleep at night. That's how much audio content is available for your consumption. Two, count them, two interviews on Why Is This a Thing this week. Both of those guys directed movies that we covered previously on the podcast. They were generous enough to come on for about an hour and talk about their movies. The first is named Bob Kraskowski. He directed a movie called The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot, which is not what it sounds like. It is the complete opposite, as a matter of fact, of what it sounds like. You think it's sort of a cheesy B movie that's bad for the sake of being bad. Turns out the movie's pretty damn good and has a lot of interesting things to say about getting older and being a veteran and regret and loss. It's kind of a deep character study, and it was so interesting to not only recap but also to talk to the director about his intentions. Bob Kraskowski, a Wattad exclusive, is available on the website. And the second guy is named Bryce Wagner, an awesome hang. Such a great podcast with him. That went up this morning. You can check that out on the website as well. He directed a documentary called After Porn Ends, and incidentally, the sequel, After Porn Ends 2. We reviewed the first movie on the podcast as part of Documentary Month and hated it. We all hated it. And we were not shy about sharing our opinions on that film. And what do you know, Bryce Wagner himself, the director of the movie, stumbled upon that review on Twitter and gave us some love. Really, that's all it was. You know, killing him with kindness, as he said. He was a good sport about the whole thing. Came on the podcast, talked with us about the second After Porn documentary, as well as his movie The Parrot Heads, which is about the fan club that follows Jimmy Buffett, rock and roll legend Jimmy Buffett of Margaritaville fame. The dude is such a cool guy and had all these great stories about not only his experience making those three documentaries, but also just living in LA and having famous friends and what happens when those famous friends encounter stalkers on the streets of Hollywood. That was a real thing. All of that shit is available in that podcast. It's such a great time. It's about an hour and 10 minutes long. go listen to both of those shows. As a matter of fact, turn off this show right now. I won't be offended. Save Cultured for a rainy day. Come back and you can hear my opinions on the Joker trailer or Veep or Barry, whenever it's convenient for you. Right now, go listen to Why Is This a Thing? It was a great time. New 2 Cents Radio on the website as well. Rob had some stories of disaster, essentially. Rob was caught in the middle of a natural disaster in the middle of goddamn Nebraska. We talked about that for about a half hour, but not before we dug into the greatest television theme songs of all time. That podcast available on the website, tmt.media. Okay, and we also have the Nico Show coming up, Movie Hall of Fame this week. It's crazy. So all is to say, we're going to be a little loosey-goosey on this podcast. All right? I don't have too much for you, but we're going to have a fun time nonetheless. This is just batting practice. Those were the real games. The Why Is This a Thing interviews, that's the major leagues. Right now, just hitting a little BP. Where do you want to begin? Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Let's start here. Dude, I'm obsessed with this Joker trailer. I don't know what it is. What is going on with me? I am so in. I'm so in. What is happening? Who am I? Who is this person behind the microphone? I don't recognize this man. I don't know who this Nico is. But this Nico is really into the Joker trailer. I'm psyched for this movie. What the hell happened? Just a week ago, I was being all cynical about superhero films. Talking about my lack of enthusiasm for the Avengers. How DC has totally shit the bed with each and every one of their movies, including Wonder Woman, in my opinion. Not impressed with either the Marvel or DC cinematic universes. I want superhero movies to go for it again. I want to get crazy. I want to get nuts. I want another Dark Knight. I want another Wolverine. I want another Kick-Ass or Unbreakable or The Incredibles. I want my superhero movies to be movies. And I'll tell you what, this Joker trailer starring Joaquin Phoenix as a young Joker, man, this looks like it's going to be a movie. This looks like they're actually going to make The King of Comedy with a little bit of Silence of the Lambs squeezed in there. Like, this is a psychological thriller, I think. I hope. Okay, here's the deal. First of all, trailers can be very misleading. Let's not kid ourselves. I can't tell you how many trailers I've seen in my life that have gotten me jazzed for a blockbuster movie, and then they turn out to just be another pile of shit. This happened with Man of Steel a few years ago. It had the Christopher Nolan name on it. I had not quite developed the raw hatred for Zack Snyder that I currently possess. When I saw the Man of Steel trailer for the first time, I'm like, fuck yeah. Dark Knight, but he has a cape and he flies. I'm in. Sign me up. But, of course, that movie sucks. So, I am open to the possibility that the Joker will be another Man of Steel, or another Justice League, or another Batman v Superman, : Dawn of Justice. But I gotta be honest with you. I think this movie is different. I think the Joker can actually be something. Like, Robert De Niro is actually in this movie. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. Like, I saw the press release ahead of time. I was aware, theoretically, Robert De Niro could be in this movie. But then I saw him on screen and I'm like, holy shit, they're actually doing this. Robert De Niro is playing a stand-up comic on The Tonight Show who gets kidnapped by the Joker, a la The King of Comedy. Except the roles are reversed. What? You were joking. I thought this was just like press release bullshit. This was just a way to drive headlines. You're not actually putting Robert De Niro in this. Turns out, yes, he's in this. Brian Tyree Henry is in this. Zazie Beetz. Shea Whigham. Mark Maron. What is this cast? Brian Callen. Are you serious? Bill Camp. We're actually going for it. So that's point number one. Point number two. If you hear a major studio director speak about the inspiration for a superhero film, understand it is total bullshit. That radar should be going off immediately. Crap. Load of crap. When the Russo brothers were filming Avengers Infinity War and in the press tour leading up to Avengers Infinity War, they were like, oh, we took a lot of inspiration from 2 days in the Valley and Out of Sight. Those movies really laid the blueprint for this CGI extravaganza with men in tights. I think at one point they cited Alan Pakula's The Parallax View. David Fincher was brought up. The Russo brothers are really the best at this, right? And so they'll cite an incredibly artistic movie or a revolutionary, ambitious piece of cinema as the inspiration for their corporate sellout. And that's what it is. Marvel movies are corporate sellouts. They are not films. They are corporate entities. So when you hear interviews where the Russo brothers or James Gunn or Jon Favreau cite Stanley Kubrick, understand that's just their way of feeling better about the fact that they've sold out. It's total bullshit. However, when Todd Phillips said, we're basing the Joker movie on the King of Comedy, I didn't believe him. Now I kind of do. Now I'm starting to see where he's going with this. I'm seeing flashes of a real movie in here. And it doesn't happen all that often. It's basically, as I said, The Dark Knight and Logan. And that's the end of the list. So I remain skeptical. Joker is still a piece of intellectual property for Warner Brothers. This is not a film, right? It's a business endeavor. But it can be a film. In the right hands, it can be. And I'm starting to think that Todd Phillips actually took this seriously. And I am so happy about it. Because I truly believe this is where the big superhero labels should go. Like, I'm kind of sick and tired of the Marvel TV show. That's what these movies have become now. They are different iterations of the same television episode. And I'm kind of ready for some new blood. And I don't care about the continuity. I don't care about the shared universes. I don't care about the Easter eggs. I am totally fine with there being 5 different timelines in the DC Cinematic Universe. 3 to 4 people can play the Joker at any given time. And I'm cool with it. Like, DC for the last 5 years has been trying to play catch up with the Avengers. They've been throwing together this Justice League universe and They threw Batman and Superman together in the first movie, and then Wonder Woman was shoved in there. And I get what you're trying to do. I just feel like if you go the opposite direction, if you swim against stream, you might tap in to an underserved audience. I feel like there's a hunger for these types of movies. A more mature, ambitious, artistic form of superhero storytelling, right? I mean, Logan did well. The Dark Knight did well. I can't be the only guy craving shit like this. And I'm not saying you have to make a Martin Scorsese movie. I'm not saying you have to make the King of Comedy per se, but something with shades of the King of Comedy, something with shades of Heat, shades of Silence of the Lambs, shades of a Darren Aronofsky movie, all of which I got from that Joker trailer. I feel like it would be embraced. Just a little bit. You can still make it PG-13. You know, you can still shove in your Easter eggs. You can still contribute to the mythology in some way. But I am all for giving interesting voices a shot at the plate. I am. I'm into this. I'm into this. Yeah. Color me in. Color me very, very in. For the Joker reboot. That I could not believe it. I woke up this morning. I was still in bed. And I pulled up Facebook and saw that the trailer had debuted. So I watched it sort of half asleep. The sun was creeping in. I was starting to awake from my slumber. And I think this Joker trailer fully brought me to awakeness. Like, it jolted me. I sat up in my bed. I'm like, whoa, what is this? They're actually doing this. De Niro's in this movie. Oh, man. When is this It Chapter 2 trailer dropping? I heard that's coming, too. Is there any news with that? I saw it debuted at CinemaCon last night. I guess not. Well, if it drops between now and the end of the recording, I'll shout it out. I do want to get some of that It Chapter 2 in my life. That first movie has grown on me. I didn't like it the first time I saw it. Yeah, I've watched it a bunch on cable, and I'm really into it. And I love this cast. I mean, this upcoming cast is just dope. Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader. Give me more. All right, I'll keep Twitter open in case something drops. But I heard it was going to debut at some point today, so I'll be on the lookout for that. Needless to say, not super pumped for the upcoming Avengers. I talked about this a little bit last week. Ugh, it's whatever. It's seriously whatever. People went nuts for that teaser trailer that dropped the other day. And I also saw this could be total bullshit, too. You know, there needs to be a regulatory body that measures movie pre-sales. Because every 2 weeks, it seems like a new movie is breaking pre-sale records. But it's not just like this is the highest selling pre-sale of all time. It's like this movie released by Warner Brothers earned the most pre-sales in the first 23 minutes. By minute 24, it was broken by Avengers Infinity War. It's like we need to stop being so specific with the press releases. I want a regulatory body that tells me straight up, is this actually going to be the most popular movie of all time? Because the news article I saw is that Avengers Endgame earned the pre-sale record within its first 6 hours. Is that right or is that total bullshit? Like, it could just be total bullshit. There's no way. There's no way a movie outgrossed the previous entry, which only came out a year ago, in 6 hours. Am I just blowing smoke? I don't know, man. These records, I'm just very skeptical whenever a company self-reports its records. It's like the Netflix ratings thing. Remember when Netflix was bragging about the ratings for Bird Box? There's no singular body that regulates that shit. There's no Nielsen ratings company to tell you exactly how many people are watching Bird Box or Stranger Things. So anytime the company self-reports its data, you have to be skeptical of it. I don't know. Is it Fandango reporting this? I just don't get it. I don't understand what we're doing here, people. This movie actually looks more dull than the last one. And I kind of liked Infinity War, but the like color palette that they're using here, just aesthetically, this movie looks kind of bland. There's a lot of gray. It's a lot of gray and blue. And I'm going to sit through 3 hours of this? I don't know. And then Captain Marvel pops up and whatever. No one really liked Captain Marvel. That's what I'm gathering. Everyone saw it. Nobody liked it. So that's not really getting me jazzed. I'm excited to see Chris Evans die. That's sign me up for that. Maybe I'll just walk in at the last 10 minutes of the movie. I'll go see John Wick Chapter 3 for the 10th time, and then I'll catch the back half in the other theater next door. Maybe that's what I'll do. Were there any more trailers? I guess not. Yeah, no more. Oh, no, there is one more trailer. Oh, do I want to make this its own segment? Nah, fuck it. Okay. What is the name of this movie? Let me look this up. So this trailer debuted on April Fool's Day. And I just assumed it was an April Fool's joke. Because it looked exactly like an April Fool's joke. It's like there's no way this is an actual movie. So the movie is called... excuse me, the dead don't die. The dead don't die. And listen to this cast. I saw this on Facebook, and I just assumed, like, Rotten Tomatoes had assembled this cast for a fun viral video. But no, this is a real cast of a zombie movie. Again, it's called The Dead Don't Die. Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, Steve Buscemi, Selena Gomez, Chloe Sevigny, Danny Glover, Iggy Pop, RZA. Tom Waits, too. Oh, my Lord. Directed by, get this, Jim Jarmusch, who, if you don't know, is like this really artsy-fartsy director from the 90s. I love Jim Jarmusch. He directed Broken Flowers, the Bill Murray movie. Also a great movie from a few years ago called Patterson, starring Adam Driver. A tremendous movie about a free verse poet and how the free verse poet draws inspiration. Oh, he also did the movie Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. Didn't RZA, like, write that movie or something? Or wasn't he involved? I could be totally wrong. I might be thinking of another movie. Yeah, Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai, starring Forest Whitaker. So I saw this trailer, and it seems like just another zombie comedy, right in line with Shaun of the Dead and Zombieland. But it's directed by Jim Jarmusch. It has this dynamite cast. And most importantly, it looks fucking terrible. And I couldn't believe my eyes. I did a quick Google search just to make sure. Wait a minute. Is this an April Fool's joke or is it not? Turns out they've been working on it for the last 2 years. That's what this is. Adam Driver, fresh off of Star Wars. The breakout performance in the Star Wars franchise. On-screen legend Bill Murray. And then, like, Steve Buscemi and Tilda Swinton have these bit parts. They seem to be extended cameos. Along with Tom Waits. And Iggy Pop. And Danny Glover and RZA. I couldn't believe it. It's an SNL parody. That's what the video looked like. It's terrible. When's it come out? June 14th? So I'll see it, I guess. Why not? I'm in. I love Jim Jarmusch, and I love this cast, and I am down for a Bill Murray, Adam Driver, buddy cop movie, regardless of what subgenre it exists in. Whether they're fighting drug dealers or traffickers or zombies, like, whatever. It's just, it's odd. I really thought it was an April Fool's joke because the trailer was released on April Fool's Day. Maybe that was the intention. Or maybe this is just a big joke. Maybe this isn't actually happening. Because the trailer didn't look like a real movie either. It seemed like it was shot for the trailer. All of those scenes were specifically put in the trailer. But I don't know. Apparently there's a movie coming. The Dead Don't Die. Directed and written by Jim Jarmusch. Check out that trailer. See if you feel the same way. Let's take a break. When we come back, some television recaps and some more news from the world of Hollywood. It's Cultured. Stick around. All right, a few odds and ends from the world of television. Let's get into it. Three television programs debuted new seasons this weekend, two of which I quite enjoyed, and I have enjoyed both of those shows for quite some time. The third I was very underwhelmed by, and I guess we will begin with that underwhelming season premiere. I am unfortunately talking about the new and improved, quote-unquote, Twilight Zone. Yes, the Twilight Zone is back, the classic Rod Serling television series, one of the most influential television series of all time, according to critics and myself. Ask anyone in the know, they will talk very glowingly about the Twilight Zone. The series has come and gone a few times over the years. The original series is from 1959 and went all the way to 1964. There have been motion pictures, reboots, remakes across several television networks. There was a series in the 90s that ran for 4 years. I believe there was also a version in the early 2000s. Was Forrest Whitaker involved with that? He might have been the narrator on that. I don't remember what network that was on. But this has been a property that has been relaunched to middling success over the years. I actually quite enjoy the Twilight Zone movie, and I even like the Spielberg segment in the Twilight Zone movie. People are often critical of that segment. And by the way, that segment was remade into another episode of the new Twilight Zone series. That is, Terror at 20,000 Feet? I forget what it's called now. But that was a segment in the Twilight Zone movie, which saw a number of individual Golden Age directors taking a shot at an episode of the Twilight Zone. I think for the most part, though, the series has sort of, I don't know, its time has passed it by. And maybe that's being a bit harsh. I really didn't care for the premiere. I only saw the first episode. It's called The Comedian, and it stars Kumail Nanjiani. I won't get too far into the plot. What I will say is that getting old is hard. Getting old is tough. Just ask Tommy Lee Jones in No Country for Old Men. It's hard watching the world pass you by, but it happens. It happens in life, and it especially happens in art. Take music, for example. At one point in time, Chubby Checker and Fats Domino and Little Richard were the most famous, ambitious, boundary-pushing musicians on the planet. They were it back in the day. And they were so it that for the next several decades, every single goddamn musician on the planet copied their shtick. Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, James Brown, all direct descendants of that generation of musician. But as you get older, and as the audience gets older with you, and as a younger generation feels the need to inject their own identity into popular music, you begin to fade into obscurity. This is the circle of life, my friends. It is the natural order of things. And I can't help but think that the exact same thing has happened to the Twilight Zone. Back in the day, Rod Serling was fucking Little Richard, pushing the boundaries, breaking down walls, introducing the public to a new form of storytelling. But like all innovators, like all great creators, you hit a brick wall. You stop innovating, and you're forced to pass the baton. The Twilight Zone introduced pop culture to a new vocabulary, a new way of doing things. And as a result, hundreds upon hundreds of Twilight Zone ripoffs were spawned. And those ripoffs spawned other ripoffs. And those ripoffs of ripoffs spawned more ripoffs. And the storytelling medium evolved. We are now so far down the rabbit hole. We have gone through so many dimensions of evolution with the Twilight Zone formula that the original formula now looks outdated. We have Black Mirror now. We don't need the Twilight Zone. We have the X-Files now. We don't need the Twilight Zone. We have Jordan Peele making Us and Get Out on the big screen. We don't need Jordan Peele revisiting old stories from the 50s. It's unfortunate. It really, but this happens in art all the time. The vocabulary, the aesthetic becomes so embedded in the culture that you forget where it came from. And now, think about it. Charlie Booker, is it Booker or Brooker, who works on Black Mirror, has had decades, has had an entire lifetime to stew on the Twilight Zone, to measure its strengths and weaknesses, to draw from it inspirations, and to point out its flaws and exclude those flaws. I mean, I don't think there's any debate. The new Black Mirror is far better than the new Twilight Zone. It's not even, it's night and day. In fact, the new Twilight Zone, and again, I'm only basing this off of one episode, but I've read the synopsis for the second episode. The Terror at 20,000 Feet, I'm sorry, it's not Terror. I should get the name right. It's Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, correct? Nightmare at 30,000 Feet. Okay, they keep changing the name. I get it. The new Nightmare at 30,000 Feet, rather than having the main character see a creature on the wing of the plane, you know, that iconic Twilight Zone episode, rather than there being a creature on the plane, the main character played by, what's that guy's name? What the hell's that guy's name? Shit. I like that guy. What's that guy's name? Adam Scott. Okay, sorry. The main character played by Adam Scott is haunted by a podcast. And the same thing in The Comedian. There's a lot of social commentary in that episode that's sort of ham-fisted in there. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't fit. The Twilight Zone was better, in my opinion, when it allowed itself to be crazy and when it went in psychedelic, odd directions. You know, it was never about the social commentary. The social commentary of The Twilight Zone was always incidental. And I don't know what Rod Serling's process was when he wrote those episodes, but it always felt to me like the idea came first and the theme came later. And in my opinion, that's how you create the best art. In this version of The Twilight Zone, and this might be Jordan Peele's influence, I'm not sure, the theme is shoved in to a sort of outdated story. And it just doesn't work for me. And I hope it improves. I'm rooting for this show, and I'm rooting for CBS and their streaming service to make lots of money. That's the other thing, too. CBS All Access is in sort of a pickle here. They keep pushing this platform. Is anybody, like, subscribing to CBS All Access because of The Twilight Zone? I don't know. I could be wrong. I saw the first episode. It was made available free on YouTube. So watch the first episode if you are so inclined. But this is tough. I hear all the time, whenever Netflix like gets a new movie or TV show, for example, when they got Roma, when they got the rights to Roma, the industry consensus on that was they only got Alfonso Cuarón under contract to bring in a Latino audience. They want new Latino subscribers. And then I'm like, all right, but I don't know. That's not why I signed up for Netflix. I'd be interested, if you're out there, maybe tweet me. If you were like late to the party on Netflix, was there one original series or movie that pushed it over the edge for you? That broke the dam, so to speak. You know, like, was there one, was it either Roma or was it Ballad of Buster Scruggs or was it Bird Box or was it Stranger Things or was it House of Cards? Was there one show that was like, all right, fuck it, I'll pay $10 a month so I can watch this show? And that's why you're subscribing to Netflix. Because that seems to be CBS's plan. Their plan is, all right, we have this CBS catalog. You can watch old Columbo episodes and old episodes of Cheers and CSI and Survivor. And you can watch some of the new shows once they debut so you don't miss any episodes of The Big Bang Theory. But in terms of original programming, we have The Good Fight. And we have X-Files. I'm sorry, X-Files. And we have Twilight Zone, and that's it. And, yeah, I don't know, like, if that's a sustainable model. Like, I feel like your output... Oh, I guess they have Star Trek, too. They have two Star Trek shows. Maybe. I don't know. Are there, like, Star Trek fans that subscribe to CBS All Access just to watch that show? And it's, like, $10 a month, right? So, like, why would I pay $10 for one TV show every single month? I don't know. That's a dilemma for me. Like, I just feel like with all these streaming services, I've been saying this, we were talking about it with Apple last week. Netflix and Hulu and Amazon have such a head start. Their library is so vast. I don't know if you can justify a CBS All Access subscription for three TV shows that you couldn't watch anywhere else. I don't know. And especially not of this quality. I'm sorry to be a downer on The Twilight Zone. I really am, because I was... very hopeful for this show. I just feel like the world has passed it by. The vocabulary of Twilight Zone is embedded in literally every science fiction story we have today. But the original is now, it's just dated. It's dated. And other people are doing it better. Charlie Brooker is doing it better with Black Mirror. The X-Files did it better in the 90s. Jordan Peele did it better with Get Out. I also don't know how much Jordan Peele actually contributed to the writing of this show. I think he wrote, did he write the comedian episode? I guess, all right, he's credited as one of the creators. I don't know if he's like in the writer's room or not. I'd be interested to see that. And obviously he's the narrator. Yeah, I was bummed out. I was bummed out by it, not going to lie. Anyway, on to some shows that I enjoyed. Both returned to the home box office network this week. I am talking about Barry and Veep. Barry and Veep. Two very different shows in many ways, but also two shows that fit perfectly together like pieces of a puzzle on HBO Sunday nights. It's just an incredible double bill. I am now pumped. And once Game of Thrones enters the party, it's just going to be amazing. I cannot wait to sit there and do Game of Thrones, Barry, and Veep 2 hours in a row this April. So Veep is a show that is heading into its final season. And the whole cast is back. And the writing staff is back. And it's basically the same show that we've been watching for 7 years. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, of course, has been battling breast cancer for the last 2 years. So her health has sort of gotten in the way of the production process. She is back, though, and better than ever. The show is just more of the same. And I took so much pleasure in that because there aren't many sitcoms that are just the same anymore. You know what I mean? There aren't. I was thinking about this. So The Walking Dead just ended, right? Trust me, follow me on this, okay? We're going to go in this in a roundabout way. But The Walking Dead just ended. And, like, they're killing off every character on The Walking Dead. It's basically Norman Reedus and the woman that plays Carol, and that's it. And all the other characters are gone, and they're just cycling out the same... They're cycling out a new cast every season. And I was thinking to myself, God, that's a bummer. Why couldn't The Walking Dead just end on a high note like Breaking Bad did? And then I thought about it some more, and I realized, oh shit, that's how television used to work. Like, The Walking Dead is trying to be ER. The Walking Dead is trying to be Law and Order. It's not about ending on a high note. It's not about framing the story in a nice, succinct package. It's about milking as much of this franchise as you possibly can. And squeezing the lemon for all it's worth. That's The Walking Dead now. And ER was the same way. ER was an incredibly important and significant and popular television show. And it had like 5 good seasons. And then it ran for 15 more. And none of the original cast was still on. But it's ER. And NBC had a profitable franchise. And they weren't going to get rid of that profitable franchise. Like, television shows didn't used to have that luxury, man. Not every show was MASH. If you had a, not every show was Seinfeld. You know, like, Seinfeld ended after 9 seasons. That seems like an eternity by today's standards. But Jerry Seinfeld wanted to go out on top. They offered him $100 million to do a 10th season. So back in the day, if you had a hit on your hands, you were not going to part ways with it. You know, for the sake of artistic integrity. You know, that was never a concern. It was never about sticking the landing. So Walking Dead is just doing ER. They had 3 solid seasons that people enjoy, maybe 4. And some people still watch it. It's not as popular as it once was, but it's profitable and it's sustainable. And you could theoretically tell a zombie apocalypse story for 20 seasons with different characters. So I'm kind of bummed that Veep is ending because, like, I feel like Veep could go on for 15 seasons and I would still watch and love it. Like, that's how good this show is. It's just pleasure. It is pure pleasure just injected into your veins every episode. The pacing, the jokes, they are just so consistent. You get this serotonin hit every like 30 seconds on that show. Rapid fire jokes again and again and again. The performances are awesome. There are a million stories you could tell in this world. You know, there are a million ways you can make fun of American politics. And I feel like the show is only scratching the surface of that. I could really watch this show for 15 years, and I'm so bummed that it's going away. It's just such a consistent presence in my life and a great sitcom. And you don't get many of those anymore. You really don't. Modern Family was sort of the last consensus sitcom hit. And you have Louie, for example, and you have Atlanta, and you have all these shows that are sort of sitcoms, but not really sitcoms. And even Barry, to a certain extent, is kind of a sitcom, but it's mostly a dramedy. I just want more shows like Veep that isn't going to change all that much. The story is not that important. You just want to spend time with these characters, laugh at what they do and say, and rinse and repeat. That's the show. And I'm so happy that it's back, and I'm so sad that it's leaving. If you have not watched Veep, it's a great little binge. It's put it right next to The Office. Cycle it in. Rather than watching The Office for the eighth time, flip on Veep and do that all the way through. It's great. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is just terrific on it. We're not going to have many comedic performances like that on television ever again. She's so dynamic and so good on it. And then Barry's back. And here's the thing about Barry. And it sort of operates in stark opposition aside Veep. Because that show sort of, you know, peaked at the end of season one. I don't mean this in a bad way. I don't. It's only entering its second season. The show is very young still. But I think the consensus amongst critics, and I was one of those people, is that if you end Barry at the end of season one, it is an all-time great television comedy. It is a terrific miniseries that you'd be able to put in a museum for the next century, and people would marvel at how perfect it was. You know, like, it was just a great story with a narrative arc that had a beginning, middle, and end. Why do we need a season two? But I do think, like, the creators of the show aren't listening to you when you say that. Like, they're filtering that noise out. They're making an old school sitcom with new school sensibilities. So I'm sure they are prepared to go 5 to 6 years with Barry. I'm having a hard time seeing how they're going to do that, because the show is ramping up. Here's essentially what happened, right? Barry is a show about a hitman who decides he wants to become an actor. And that's the log line. It sounds like an SNL sketch. Hitman wants to take an acting class. So he does. And turns out, when you want to be an actor and a hitman at the same time, things get messy. And there's collateral damage. And there are concerns that often turn very dark and depressing. And that's what happened with Barry season one. It started with this hilarious romp, comedic romp, that had some violence in it, but the violence was played for laughs. And by the end of the first season, it's Breaking Bad. The show is literally Breaking Bad. It has some great laughs and great comedic performances from Bill Hader and Henry Winkler. But still about a hitman. And hitmen sometimes have to do bad things. And in the case of Barry, Bill Hader's character is forced to cover his tracks on numerous occasions. And the results are not that great. So, yeah, Barry was awesome in the first season. And now we're sort of stuck with this weird dramedy of a show. And it looks like they're going to be able to do some interesting things. But again, it feels like we're heading towards a conclusion here. And I don't know how long they're going to keep up this act. But this show doesn't seem sustainable. It truly doesn't. Veep feels like it could go on for 15 years. Barry feels like it might get a little tired after 15 episodes. Think about it. We're only at episode 9. This is a half hour comedy. So we have only seen 4.5 hours of Barry so far. There were only 8 episodes in that first season, correct? There might have been 10. But regardless, there are less hours of Barry than the first season of Breaking Bad. And we're already at the end point for Barry, so it seems. Like, we're already at the Walter White Heisenberg inflection point. So the first season is truly unprecedented. I don't feel like a transformation like that has ever happened so quickly in the history of television. But until then, I am very intrigued by where they're going. And I am interested to see how long they can keep up this high wire act. I thought the premiere was very strong. Very, very strong. But I still can't help but feel that concern. I do. It's a tension. It's this natural tension that happens. But anyway, I would recommend, do binge watch Barry. Check it out. See where they go. At the very least, season two is going to be an interesting experiment to see, can we top what happened in season one? I think about the show Homeland all the time, too. Homeland, if it ended after that season one finale, it is one of the best miniseries of all time. But then season two Homeland happens, and the show kind of jumped the shark. It was rough. Season two was a rough one. So, and look at Homeland now, right? It's hard. It's hard to find your footing. It's really easy to make one good season of television. Two, three, four seasons, it's a whole different animal. All right, those are my thoughts on The Twilight Zone, Veep, and Barry. When we come back, one more break, we'll do a quick rundown of Hollywood news. Stick around. It's Cultured. Lightning round, motherfuckers. Let's do it. Quick lightning round here on Cultured. Joel Cohen is going to be directing an on-screen version of Macbeth, the Shakespeare play. You know that, Macbeth. I love how this article describes Macbeth. Macbeth follows a Scottish nobleman named Macbeth, who is convicted by a trio of witches that it is his destiny to become the king of Scotland. Urged on by his ambitious wife, he tries to seize power by any means necessary. In case you didn't read it in high school. So Joel Cohen is directing without his brother Ethan. This is the first time he's worked independently from Ethan, right? They maybe did some editing work or some script work apart from one another, but in terms of directing, every Cohen brother movie has involved both of them. So that's going to be an interesting experiment to see who exactly brought what to the process. Can Joel do it on his own? I'm sure that's what he's trying to figure out for himself. That'll be interesting to see. But the two stars as Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are none other than Frances McDormand, obviously, the wife of Joel Cohen and frequent collaborator. Like, she's, you know, in most Coen Brothers movies. And get this, for the first time in a Coen Brothers flick, Denzel Washington. I'm really excited about this. Denzel, Francis, Joel Cohen working on Macbeth. This is the type of stuff that I've wanted Denzel to do for a while. And I haven't been able to quite put my finger on it, but I think we're getting there. This is a great choice by Denzel. For the last 15, 20 years, he's sort of attempted this auteur thing. It began with Training Day. Like, he had a lot to do with the production of Training Day, even though he wasn't the credited director. The reports are that he did a lot of the directing behind the scenes, but he did Fences. This guy's trying to go for one of the all-time great Hollywood resumes, and he has one of the all-time great Hollywood resumes, and he's one of our finest actors, no doubt. I've wanted to see Denzel work with someone like this. I wanted to see him do a Tarantino movie, or a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, or a movie where he's just sort of allowed to do a cool monologue and play an idiosyncratic character and exhibit other sensibilities. Because, I don't know, if you look at Denzel's filmography, they're mostly the same. Everything is, for the most part, Malcolm X and Flight, for example. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of sameness to Denzel's filmography. A lot of his characters are very similar. This is a decidedly different type of movie. Coen Brothers movies are unlike any other movies that come out in Hollywood. And you know, this is the exact right fit. I am so in favor of this. I am very pro this Macbeth adaptation, even though I am a bit skeptical Ethan's not going to be involved. We'll find out. Was Ethan pulling his weight all these years? We'll see. We'll see for sure. Mark Hamill is playing Chucky in the upcoming reboot of Child's Play. This is perfect. This is perfect. This is the most perfect casting I've ever seen. This is incredible casting. I have never seen a better bit of casting than this. What a layup. Like, seriously, I am at a loss. I cannot think of a better fit in the history of movies. I really can't. Maybe like Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln. Like, Daniel Day-Lewis looks exactly like Abraham Lincoln. All right, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's it. Meryl Streep is Margaret Thatcher. I'm looking right now. These are actors that look like the characters they played. Yeah, none of these are a more perfect fit. Like, when I heard this news, I'm like, of course. Mark Hamill has played the Joker in the animated versions of Batman, has been terrific in those performances, has such a creepy voice, doesn't necessarily have the acting chops that he once did. Like, I'm not a huge fan of him in The Last Jedi. So he sort of belongs in the audio booth rather than in front of the camera. I just think it's perfect. The voice of a creepy doll. I just think Mark Hamill. That's great. I would not have picked anyone else. I cannot wait for this Child's Play reboot. I'm sort of psyched. I'm sort of pumped. Isn't Brian Tyree Henry in that as well? Yes. Child's Play. Mark Hamill. I was so impressed by that news. Yeah, Brian Tyree Henry and Audrey Plaza, along with Mark Hamill as Chucky. Released June 21st of this year. I love it. All right, one final thing I wanted to do. So Game of Thrones debuts in 2 weeks. That's it. Wow. April 17th. No, not April. I'm sorry. April 21st. Yes. April 21st, Game of Thrones is back. Yeah, we're about 2 weeks and 4 days from the premiere of Game of Thrones, the final season. And unfortunately, I no longer have a gambling podcast. We no longer do Breaking Even, Andre and I. So, in lieu of that, I wanted to run down some of the prop bets for this upcoming season of Game of Thrones. I wanted to give you the hottest action. So if you don't know what gambling is or how gambling works, you simpletons, I'm going to give you a bunch of odds that something happens on Game of Thrones. And here's how you should interpret odds. If you hear the number plus 700, that means that there is a 7-to-1 chance that that outcome metamorphosizes. So if, for example, let's just use this as an example. So these are all the Game of Thrones prop bets that you can place in Vegas. I'm reading these off of Bovada.lv, my gambling site of choice. Who will rule Westeros at the end of season 8? Who will be the king or queen? They describe it here. Wager will be settled based on the confirmed king or queen of the Andals and the First Men. If there is no king or queen, whomever rules or controls King's Landing will be deemed the winner. So here are the odds. Ready? Bran Stark is the favorite, plus 220. So that's 2.2 to 1, essentially. One out of every 2.2 times, Bran Stark becomes the king of Westeros. So that means that Vegas will pay you $220 for every $100 that you bet. If I bet $100 on Bran Stark, he becomes king of Westeros at the end of Game of Thrones, I win $220. Jon Snow is the second favorite, plus 350. Sansa Stark is the third favorite, plus 500. Daenerys Targaryen, the fourth favorite. Dude, how crazy is this? Plus 700. That means you will win $700 if you wager 100 on Daenerys Stormborn. Gendry, 7-1. Peter Baelish, ooh, intriguing, 10-1. There is, of course, this fan theory that that Littlefinger, Peter Baelish, has a deal with the Faceless Men, and they pulled some sorcery and made it seem like Peter Baelish was killed off at the end of season 7, but he's actually alive. That is a fan theory. It is not confirmed. Regardless, 10-1 odds. Interesting. The Night King, 10-1. Tyrion Lannister, 10-1. Jon and Dany's baby. We don't even know if she's pregnant, but plus 1,400 or 14-1. Arya Stark, 16-1. Samwell Tarly, 20-1. Cersei Lannister, 25-1. And the rest drop off from there. Here are my favorite bets. I think Dany Targaryen is a layup here. I think that's a great bet. The show has sort of been leading to her victory the entire way. It would feel a bit unsatisfying if she didn't ultimately assume the throne. We've been following her story for 7 seasons now, and only in the last 2 seasons has she had any significant influence on the plot. She's been basically unimportant from, I guess, well, maybe when she met up with Tyrion. That's when the ball started to roll. But before then, she's just been off doing her own thing across the Narrow Sea. So, like, I feel like the whole show is leading up to that. I don't know what they're ultimately going to do. There is a lot of momentum building towards the Bran Stark thing. There's also this theory that Bran Stark and the Night King are the same character. So I don't know how that would pay out in Vegas, but seems like all roads are pointing towards Bran. I wouldn't go with the favorite. I don't think the odds are good enough. Jon Snow plus 350 is all right. Sansa Stark, eh. I like Dany Targaryen at 7-1. That's my favorite bet. If I'm going for a long shot, Cersei. Why not? Cersei at 25-1. I think the assumption is that Cersei Lannister is going to die this season. It feels like that's been the assumption for the last 3 seasons, though. And she's still around. So that's got to mean something. I think it's possible that by the end of the show, all of the heroes defeat the White Walkers, humanity triumphs, and all of the kingdoms are left to govern themselves and live in harmony. I think that's that is a plausible ending. And that ending would involve Cersei Lannister maintaining control of King's Landing. So, yeah, I kind of like that at 25-1. And that's about it. Who will perish first in season 8? Which character will die first of the following? Yeah, listed competitors only, which means here are your 10 candidates. Euron Greyjoy is the favorite at plus 210. Yara Greyjoy, plus 250. Sansa Stark, plus 350. Yeah, everybody thinks like the Starks are going to die. What's up with that? Theon Greyjoy, plus 750. Jaime Lannister, plus 1,000. Cersei Lannister, plus 1,200. Dany Targaryen, plus 250. No, I'm sorry, plus 2,500, 25-1. Arya Stark, 50-1. Tyrion Lannister, 50-1. Jon Snow, 80-1. Yeah, of these competitors, I think Euron Greyjoy is a pretty good bet. I would go with either Euron or Yara Greyjoy. I think the rest of these characters make it to the finale. I could see Theon, I guess, dying too. If these are our only candidates, then yeah, I think Euron Greyjoy is a layup there. When will Cersei Lannister perish? Episode 5 or 6 is the heavy favorite, minus 650. That means you have to bet $650 to win a measly 100. And I think that's right. I wouldn't touch that bet at all. I wouldn't bet on anything. You're not getting good enough odds. Arya Stark is the favorite in the Who Will Kill Cersei Lannister category. Who will kill Cersei Lannister? Arya Stark plus 150. Jaime Lannister is the second favorite at plus 180. I think it's a two-horse race. Or I guess you could bet does not perish at series end 7-1. That's a pretty good bet too. as I said, it is possible. If you think Cersei is going to rule Westeros, or you think that there is a good chance she rules Westeros, then her not dying is a pretty good guess. I think thematically, it feels like they've been hinting at Jaime killing her. The dysfunction in that relationship, the growing apart of those two characters, has been a significant arc over the last several seasons. It seems right. Now, that being said, Arya Stark, the entire show, has been leading up to Arya killing Cersei. So I could go either way on that. I think Jaime's going to be the one to do it, though. He killed the Mad King. Now he's going to kill the Mad Queen. Parallel stories. Things come full circle. You know how much Hollywood loves that shit. I would go with Jaime at plus 180 on that. And that'll do it. That's it. Those are the prop bets. There's a bunch of others. You can pick either or who will perish first in season 8. For example, you can choose between Varys and Bronn, Tormund Giantsbane or Brienne of Tarth, Gilly or Hot Pie, etc., etc. These bets are available everywhere. I will caution you, Vegas might know something already. That is my only concern. That's why I am often apprehensive to bet on these things, because it doesn't take much to leak the ending of Game of Thrones to a Vegas bookmaker. So I don't know how tightly sealed the latest season of Game of Thrones is. I know that they shot multiple endings. That was their security measure. So theoretically, there are 5 to 6 endings that are all just as valid. And at the last second, the showrunners are going to decide which one is the real one. So I don't know. So just keep that in mind. Vegas might know something and you might get screwed out of a lot of money. But I don't think we're quite there yet. It doesn't seem like we're quite there yet. So those are my prop bets for the last season of Game of Thrones. So excited for that show to come back. Check it out. Obviously. Of course you're going to be watching. You love that show. I love that show. Game of Thrones final season this year. That's it, babies. You know I love you so much. You guys are the best. As I said, I mentioned it all at the beginning of the episode. Listen to Why Is This a Thing? The Movie Hall of Fame, 2 Cents Radio, The Nico Show. All available on the website, TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media. Please, please, please leave us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. That's the best way to help this endeavor. Do a search for either Why Is This a Thing or The Movie Hall of Fame. Those are the two big shows. This one too, though. If you enjoy what you've been listening to over the past hour, head on over to Apple Podcasts, hit 5 stars. You don't have to write anything if you don't want to. It helps greatly. It really does. Every review counts. I am at FunnyNicoTweets on Twitter. Find the Too Many Thoughts feed with teasers for each and every podcast at TMT_media. And folks, I do hope that you come back next time. Because you know what happens when you and I get together, when we embrace in each other's loving arms, when we spoon on the sofa of Hollywood, then and only then do you and I get culture. See you next time.